At first glance, there are many reasons why modern readers might decide not to read Blaise Pascal's Pensée, the work that he left unfinished at the time of his early death at the age of 39 in 1662. Instead of simply listing the book's virtues, I thought I would do a very Pascalian thing in considering the different sides to each argument. So, by responding directly to some of the disadvantages of reading such a work, I hope to look also at the flip side to these perceived negative opinions. So the first question I would raise, what relevance would a defence of the Christian religion have to someone who does not share Pascal's particular brand of faith? Well, it's indeed true that Pascal was planning an apology or defence of Christianity, and he was a follower of what is now known as Jansenism, a small wing of the Catholic Church that placed the fall of mankind at the centre of their belief system. God created humans in a state of absolute happiness and innocence, but ever since Adam and Eve tasted the forbidden apple, all mankind has been in a state of corruption and wretchedness. You would be forgiven for thinking, therefore, that Pascal's text is not going to be the most joyous of reading experiences, reminding us constantly of our fallen state. And yet, I would argue that even though all these elements play a part in the Pensée, the experience of reading his thoughts is constantly fascinating and even exhilarating. Pascal was known first as a mathematical prodigy in his childhood, and he continued to produce stunningly original scientific writings on aspects like probability and proving the existence of vacuums. In his 20s, he frequented the worldly circles of Paris, comprising a number of fellow scientists, but also many highly intelligent people, known as libertins, who were openly sceptical of unquestioning religious faith, and who preferred to place the value of human reason at the forefront of the way they lived their lives. Now, these are the people that Pascal had in mind when he started writing the Pensée. Worldly non-believers or agnostics who, unlike hardened atheists, were still receptive to arguments about the existence of God. Pascal is by no means the only writer in the 17th century to attempt to convert sceptics. But unlike most of those authors who try to batter their intended readers into submission by engaging in fire and brimstone rhetoric, Pascal attempts to understand the psychology of his readers, to show them that he understands where they are coming from. Many fragments don't discuss religion at all, but simply comment upon characteristics of what he termed the human condition. A number of passages in which there is a religious message start not with religion, but with simple observations, such as the difficulty of happily remaining in a room without distractions, or musing upon the nature of persuasion in everyday life. And rather than simply quoting the writings of the Church Fathers or the Bible, Pascal refers also to those worldly writers who were most appreciated by the libertins of the day, most notably Michel de Montaigne and the Greek Stoic philosopher Epictetus. He also uses a wide range of imagery that would be appreciated by a non-religious reader. Some of his friends enjoyed leisure pursuits and gambling. Pascal had even written a mathematical treatise on the roulette wheel. And rather than relying on uniquely pious models to support his arguments, Pascal draws on the language of gaming, sports such as tennis and billiards, and other activities like hunting, dancing, music, and conversation. Knowing the scientific interests of these readers, he also makes use of recent scientific discoveries, such as the invention of the microscope and the telescope. Perhaps the most famous passage from the Pensée, known as The Wager, appeals precisely to the mathematical interests of his libertin friends. He tries to weigh up the odds of what one stands to lose or gain if we wager for or against the existence of God. He certainly knows how to engage and keep the attention of his sceptical readers, thus hopefully avoiding indifference, which he realises to be the most difficult state to break through when trying to be persuasive. In the exactly 350 years since the Pensée was first published, the increasing questioning of what were previously seen as religious certainties means that Pascal's writing still has a relevance that can be appreciated by believers and non-believers alike. So that was the first objection. The second possible objection. Given the fact that Pascal died before completing his magnum opus, what is the point of reading a series of seemingly disconnected and disordered fragments that almost certainly bear little resemblance to what would have been the finished and presumably much more polished version if he had been able to finish it? Well, certainly it can be a little daunting to open the Pensée and find hundreds of separately numbered fragments, some several pages in length, others just consisting of a few words. My advice would be, rather than reading the whole book from beginning to end, you should dip into the text, finding those fragments that appeal to you, and simply enjoy the freedom that such a way of reading can give you. In the world of scholarship, there are two main schools of thought with regard to the ordering of the fragments. Some researchers have looked at certain passages where Pascal seems to have sketched a putative plan to his work and have tried to construct or imagine a logical order, in some cases even putting different sections together to make a more cohesive whole. Other scholars, and I definitely place myself in this latter category, see the unfinished fragmentary state of the manuscript as much closer to Pascal's original intentions. He states openly that, and I quote, "I will write down my thoughts here without order, but not in a random confusion." Now, this confusion is not random precisely because, as he goes on to mention, he's trying to show his reader that nothing in our fallen world can ever be perfect or whole, and even his writing reflects that lack of cohesion. And after all, what is a fragment? It is something that is both open-ended and a small part of something larger. So, for example, if we tear up a piece of paper and then discover that it is a vital document that we need to keep, our immediate inclination will be to try and put the fragments together, to make it into a comprehensible document. Now, in the same way, by leaving the Pensée in a fragmentary state, he is forcing us to do the searching ourselves, to engage with ideas and concepts that relate to more profound issues. As he writes, it is an indispensable duty to search. End of quotation. So almost despite ourselves, we have become engaged on a quest that he hopes will lead us to greater self-knowledge and, just possibly, to an acknowledgement of the need for religion. And now the third and final objection that I've imagined. If I'm going to read a work of French thought, what is the point of reading Pascal rather than someone like his near contemporary Descartes, who is seen by most philosophers as the father of modern thought? Now, Descartes is certainly a major figure. Everybody knows his famous dictum, "I think, therefore I am," and I wouldn't want to discourage anybody from reading his work. But for me, Descartes does not have the beauty or variety of Pascal's written style. Pascal says at one point that he wants in his writing to recreate, and I quote, "the ordinary conversations of life." And his use of imagined dialogues and opposing viewpoints do have the vividness and even spontaneity of conversation. It would be wrong, however, just to describe his written style as conversational, because some fragments have the beauty of prose poems, and others consist of highly memorable maxim-like statements, such as, and I quote, "The heart has its reasons that reason can never know." He also has a keen sense of humour, especially in his depiction of the absurdities and incongruities of life. Those who do not enjoy sports will no doubt agree wholeheartedly with his image of people who prefer pushing a billiard ball around a table or chasing after a hare that they could have bought at the market, rather than contemplating deeper considerations of life. Above all, and this, of course, was Pascal's stated intention, it's impossible to remain indifferent to Pascal's prose and thinking. He can be enticing as well as antagonizing, but he is never dull. If you wish to read the Pensée, I would recommend any edition that follows the ordering of Philippe Sellier. In translation, A.J. Krailsheimer's Penguin translation is still probably the best around. But there is also a good, if incomplete, translation by Honor Levy in the Oxford World's Classics series.